Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at WTGrantFoundation.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Busey Bank, Urbana; Jupiter's Pizzeria and Billiards, Champaign; Unitarian Universalist Church, Urbana; and Illini Studio, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you. WILL programs are made possible by Women's Health Practice and Dr. Suzanne Truppen at 2125 South Neal Street in Champaign. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan for State of Illinois employees and is accepting new patients. More information is available at 356-3736.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Shepherd's pie and quiche, tarts, sweet and savory, crisps, crumbles, and cobblers. Our guest this afternoon is chef, food writer, and cookbook author Julie Hassan. She's the author most recently of The Complete Book of Pies, 200 Recipes from Sweet to Savory. In addition to the recipes, the book contains information on ingredients, on tools and equipment, and tips for making and handling dough. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions about pies. We'd also love to hear your stories about pies. What are your favorites? Do you have a recipe that you turn to time and time again? Feel free to share a tip, a recipe, and or a story with us this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Julie Hassan is the author of 5 cookbooks. She's also contributed articles and recipes for magazines, including Bon Appetit, Cooking Light, and Vegetarian Times. You'll find her online at www.juliehassan.com. She spells her last name H-A-S-S-O-N. You'll also find her online at everydaydishtv.com. In addition to The Complete Book of Pies, Julie's cookbooks include 125 best cupcake recipes and 300 best chocolate recipes. All 3 are available in paperback from the publisher Robert Rose. And again, our phone numbers 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Julie, so good to talk with you this afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, what was your favorite pie as a girl?
Oh, I would say boysenberry or blueberry.
Oh, you're a berry.
You're a berry person.
I am too. I love berries, and I love it that you have recipes in here now at this time of the year for using frozen berries.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting you should say that, because that was one thing that I would have problems years ago, looking for recipes in books that call for frozen pies. I mean, excuse me, frozen berries and pies, because most pie books only call for fresh berries or fresh fruit. And our window to make those pies is so small during the year. So I thought, you know what, I really need to explore this and be able to give people the information on how to use frozen fruit.
Okay, well, now tell us about one of the pies that you've included in the book, blueberry cranberry pie. This is a very good one for this time of year.
Oh, that's a great one, the blueberry cranberry one. And I love being able to combine a fresh fruit and a frozen fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Although you can get frozen cranberries and it will work as well, but that is a delicious pie recipe. And I'm trying to see what page that's on as we're talking about it.
Let me see. I think I marked it 39. Here. It is page 39.
Yeah, and that one was actually shared with me by a fellow cookbook author and friend, Diane Morgan. And it's from her book, The Thanksgiving Table. And it's a great pie. It's got orange in it, and it's got that sweet and tangy flavors, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, is there any kind of a particular trick to using frozen berries in a pie?
I would say that the couple of tricks for the frozen berries would be to not thaw them. I like to use them frozen because if you thaw them, they get really wet and mushy. Mm-hmm. If you use them frozen or just lightly thawed, that's perfect, you know, where it's still frozen, but it's just a little bit softer. And you will have to bake your pie longer.
Mm-hmm.
That is a given. So sometimes it can take as much as another, you know, 25 minutes or so, depending on your oven, maybe even a little longer with the frozen fruit. But it's worth it and it's fine. You don't want to underbake the pie, especially if you're using frozen fruit.
Mm. When did you begin baking?
Oh, my earliest memories, I was probably 2. I loved baking with my mom, and my mom is a great baker. Mm. And so we were just always in the kitchen together cooking, and my grandmother cooked and baked. So it was really fun. I've just always been in the kitchen.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, food writer Julie Hassan. We're talking with her about pies. She's the author most recently of The Complete Book of Pies, 200 Recipes from Sweet to Savory. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, stories about pies. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And someone is joining us now on the toll-free line from Charleston, Line 4. Hi.
Yeah, do you have any, in your book, any tips for guys that seldom fix pies?
Well, the entire book is filled with all kinds of tips on making pies. And it's perfect for people who haven't baked pies, as well as people who have, or if you haven't baked a pie in a long time. There's just all kinds of little tips that are kind of fun along the way, and it makes the whole experience much easier.
Yeah, let's ask the caller if he has... A particular concern.
My mother-in-law used to make a grape pie, but you could only make it from fresh grapes, she said. It was fantastic, and I've never seen a recipe for grape pie. Is it true that it can only be made from fresh grapes?
Well, I would say that pretty much all grapes you would find in the store would be fresh. And I have seen recipes for grape pie, but I don't have any in the book. But, yeah, I would imagine that something like grapes, you would definitely want to use fresh grapes. But they're nice because it's available year-round.
How about gooseberry pie?
Oh, I've had gooseberry pie. I haven't made it. Gooseberries aren't always easy to find in certain areas of the country.
Just stemming the gooseberries takes forever. I've had to do that for my wife because she tried to make it for me a couple times. Did a very good job. Those two pies are probably my favorite, grape pie and gooseberry. And then my wife makes a homemade butterscotch pie. She makes the butterscotch from scratch.
Nice. They sound great.
What a lucky man you are.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And I would say that in this book, this is great for whether you have some experience in the kitchen as a baker or not, because there are all kinds of recipes in here to boost your confidence.
Absolutely.
And there's some things in here that you can do with very little children in the kitchen. And so something for everyone, I would say, here in Julie's book. Well, let's take another call now, a listener in Piatt County on line one. Hello? Line one?
Hello.
Hi.
I just went through the annual ritual of making squash pie for my relatives, and I know the problem is I only do it once a year, but I had several questions. I'm a lot more interested in it now than I used to be, and why, number one, my mother's recipe, it never tastes like hers, but she never chilled the pie dough. She never did anything like that, and she always threw an egg in the pie dough. And it was always tasted so much better than mine. And I just wondered if an egg functions as the cold water that you read in recipes, you know, the ice cold water. And then my second question is why do people use lard anyway? Why don't they just use butter? I just found it ironic that there's that butter-flavored Crisco. So I was just, looking for some tips on pie crust because I intend to get your book because I'm more interested in it now than I used to be. So I'm on a cell phone, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Well, let's see. I'll start with your question. As far as the egg, it tends to help sort of strengthen, and yet it the dough, but it creates a tender dough as well, but it makes it more foolproof. It doesn't act as the cold water, and I couldn't tell you exactly what it's doing other than it just creates a very easy dough to work with. So a lot of people do like to add an egg or an egg yolk into their dough. So maybe, you know, it's just the particular recipe she's using is just a great all-purpose dough. I always find that the cold ice water and making sure that your butter or your shortening is very cold is really important, but it sounds like your mom also has the touch on the crust. And sometimes practice, just doing it all the time, you just get really good at it, you get a feel for it, and you get a feel for a particular recipe, and so that could have a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah. Nobody walks in off the street to Carnegie Hall, right?
No, that's right. That's right. And sometimes, you know, some of these things, they just take doing them on a regular basis to really get a feel for it. You get a feel for how much water or moisture you want in your dough and what the feel is. You just get, it's sort of like being, you know, like, oh, it's almost like a zen thing with your dough. I don't know how.
You're in the zone kind of a thing?
You're in a zone, yeah. You're really comfortable with it. And I think you don't second guess it as much if you're doing it all the time. And so having that confidence could be a big part of it as well.
Yeah. And I found it very comforting that you admit in the book that if you haven't baked a pie for a while and you're someone that's been baking pies for your entire life, you feel a little rusty.
And oh, absolutely.
You just jump right back in and you say, oh, next one will be better.
That's right. And even the ones that you don't come out exactly like you maybe wanted them to, mm-hmm. they're still delicious. You put a scoop of ice cream on a homemade pie, you know, there's nothing better. And nobody else will know. That's the other thing. Other people will not know. They will be so happy that you made them a pie.
Exactly. Let's take another call. A listener on line one, I believe, in Piatt County. Oh, I'm sorry. Line three, we're going to Savoy. Okay, I'm sorry. I got out of order there. Line three, Savoy. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have three little questions here. Most important one is, could you speak about the differences in cooking pies that are not typical berry pies, such as meat and et cetera, et cetera?
Sure.
And then when did mincemeat pie no longer have meat in it? And my third one is, if you can put a little science in there, so what is the value? Why does extra cold water make something any better, as you were describing a while ago?
Okay.
Well, I will start with the last question. And the ice cold temperatures are really important because it keeps your fat from melting. And you want those pieces of fat that are sort of cut into your flour to remain whole and intact. So the best way to do that is to make sure that your fat is very well chilled. And one thing that I suggest too in the book is, if you are making pies, you know, on a regular basis, or you know that the following week you're going to be making pies, if you can pre-measure the fat that you'll need and stick it in a bag, a freezer bag, in your freezer, mark on there what it's for so you don't forget, but it will already be chilled, and it will be so nice and cold that you will have a very flaky crust. So if you can do little things like that ahead of time, you'll be insured a very flaky crust. So, yes, you definitely want your liquids, your ice water in there to be very cold, if that's what you're using in that particular recipe, and you want your fat to be very cold. And I'm not sure when mincemeat pies actually stopped containing meat, but I would think it was quite a while ago.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, you do have a chapter on savory pies and tarts, and so maybe you would talk a little bit about meat pies, including pot pies and shepherd's pie and the like.
Well, you know, the savory pies are really fun because it brings another, you know, element to the pies, and I like to say that pies can be eaten for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And it's very true with pies. One savory pie that most people are familiar with is quiche, and that is a lot of fun to make, and it's great because you can utilize all kinds of leftovers that you might have in your refrigerator, or vegetables and different things, and customize them to your taste, and it's so much fun.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say that I read a mincemeat original recipe from the 30s, and it has, like, beef tongue and so, you know, our modern tastes, I don't think, are ready for a real meat mincemeat pie anymore.
No.
I was going to mention about my pie crust recipe that's been handed down from my mother. It's wonderful because you use a beaten egg with a tablespoon of vinegar.
Ooh.
And that makes it extra tender. And I can speak from experience, you can beat the living, you know, what out of it.
Yeah.
It'll be flaky and flavorful and yummy because the vinegar has some sort of inhibitor on the gluten, too. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's about three cups of flour and a cup of shortening and then the egg and vinegar and enough cold water to make it cling. So that's the recipe. And like I say, if you've never made a pie, and even if you have to take several runs at the crust, it's wonderful.
Oh, good. Well, it's thank you so much for sharing that because it's so nice, too, that it's very easy to use. Like, you don't, I mean, you have a basic recipe, but that's something that you don't even have to write down. You could memorize easily.
Oh, yeah, you can fudge it all over the place. But the vinegar and the egg make it really foolproof, and it's the best tasting crust I've ever had. So,
wow.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We're getting a lot of inspiration here this
afternoon. Absolutely.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, food writer, cookbook author, Julie Hassan. Her latest book, The Complete Book of Pies, 200 Recipes from Sweet to Savory. My name is Celeste Quinn. Well, let's take another call now. A listener on line two in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
ladies. Hi.
It's always great to listen at Will. You have such interesting topics. This one catches my attention because I've lived here in Illinois for the last 35 years. I am Southern grown, and if your pie recipe book does not include sweet potato pies, then it's missing the greatest pie. and with that in mind, what I find as far as I'm concerned, pies or sweet pies are my favorite desserts because if you've got the right kind of flaky crust and the right kind of ingredients, I love berries also, but sweet potato pies are just magic. And if they've got a little Southern flair to them, they're even better.
Well, what's that Southern flair?
Well, I don't know what it is, but I've eaten Northern sweet potato pies, and they just don't cut it when it comes to Southern. Maybe it's the nutton egg and maybe cinnamon and the mixture of the two that does it. But at any rate, I just thought I'd chime in here.
Okay, well, thanks for chiming in.
I'm so glad you did. And, yes, there is a recipe for sweet potato pie in the book.
And maybe this pie comes, well, you make a topping with this that includes some whipping cream, some confectioner's sugar, and a little bit of bourbon.
Yeah.
That sounds good. So there is cinnamon in here. And I have a colleague who, I don't know how south Evansville, Indiana is, but he makes a sweet potato pie that's a killer.
Wow. Love a good sweet potato pie.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line three. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
I wanted to answer one question about why you use lard in pie dough. And the reason I use it, and I can always tell when my mother uses it or doesn't use it, is because it's the crispiest pie dough, flakiest, rather than using Crisco or butter. And then I have a question. When I make quiche, I use butter and Crisco, and I can't keep my dough from collapsing while I'm browning it.
Okay. Oh, okay. From collapsing sort of in on itself?
Yes.
That's where you want to use the pie weights or the beans.
I do them for the side, but how, you just pile them up all the way around to the edge?
You know, you have to pile them up pretty high, and I don't know. Oftentimes, the jars won't come with that many pie weights, or if you read a recipe, it'll just say to use a little bit. But you really want to use a lot, or else it can happen. Another tip for that is pop your rolled out crust that's in your pan before you bake it, pop it in the freezer for about 15 to 20 minutes. And the colder it is, it seems to shrink less. And it seems to collapse less. So I have great luck by popping it in the freezer. Even if you stick it in there for an hour, it's not going to hurt it. But make sure it's really, really cold, and then put in your parchment or your foil with your beans or your pie weights, and that should help.
I chill it, but I guess I need to try freezing it then.
The freezer works really well. In fact, I prefer the freezer to the just putting it in the refrigerator. It gets it much colder faster.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh, good luck.
You're welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. This afternoon we're talking about pies, sweet pies, savory pies. Our guest is chef, food writer, and cookbook author Julie Hassan. Her latest book is The Complete Book of Pies, 200 Recipes from Sweet to Savory. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. Your stories about pies are invited. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. And we also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and 800-222-WILL. As we've had a couple of questions now about shortening or comments questions, what do you think of the shortening we can find now that is non-hydrogenated?
Hydrogenated? You know, I have found the times that I've used it that it's worked fine for me, and I feel a little better about it because it's healthier. I know some people haven't had as good of luck with it. I mean, really, the truth is, if you're, in my opinion, if you're going to use shortening, really, it's a toss-up. You're not going to be eating the entire pie. To have a little bit of, you know, hydrogenated fat in there, if you notice a big difference, then I say go for the good old Crisco in the pie dough. If that's what you've been using and it works really well for you, then I would use that. But I have had some good luck using the non-hydrogenated stuff as well.
Have you ever worked with lard?
I have not worked with lard. I did not grow up with it in my pie crust and in my cooking and with my family, so it's not something that I tend to gravitate towards. But I know that there are people that are big fans of it, and they wouldn't have their pie crust any other way.
Right, right. And butter, do you use unsalted butter or salted?
You know, unsalted butter, or I try to use unsalted butter, but sometimes, you know, you've got salted butter in the fridge and that's what you use, and it's fine. I just cut down on the salt a little bit, and I find that butter definitely gives the pie dough a better flavor, but the shortening gives it a flakier, crisper crust. A combination of the two is really nice if you're looking for both flavor and, you know, that flaky crust.
Okay, and then do you do half and half, or what do you do?
I think it's kind of half and half in some of the recipes. I have a number of different recipes in the book for different versions, so depending on what you're a fan of, if you like all butter pastry, which is really good for some things, but like I said, it's not as flaky. I also have all shortening, which is a very flaky crust. There's a sour cream pastry dough in there, and there's an oil dough, which isn't necessarily flaky, but it's tender, and it's a really nice crust to use because you can just press it right into your pie pan, and you don't have to roll it out, and it's sort of a no-muss, no-fuss. It's really a great one to do with kids as well because they can just mix it together in a bowl. You just make sure that your oil is really cold. And so that's a great crust as well. I like that one, and if I'm in a hurry, it's great.
Yeah, okay. Hey, speaking of in a hurry, what do you think of the refrigerated pie crust you can get at the supermarket?
I think that there are some very good frozen organic crusts that I have found and that I used for testing some of the recipes in the book that I was very happy with. They're organic, non-hydrogenated, and have good flavor, and they're flaky. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I was thinking that, you know, if you're kind of in a rush, but you want to do something, with children in the kitchen, I think that would be great. And you have a chapter on hand pies.
Yeah.
What's a hand pie? And maybe you'd give us an idea of a recipe that you have in this part of the book and using that refrigerated dough, you know, just to have a good time with the kids. No muss, no fuss. And maybe you don't even have to be a kid. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I love baking with children. I have two children of my own who I actually wish would get in the kitchen a little more often. But they're teenagers, and that's a whole other story. But I think any way that you can pull your kids into the kitchen is wonderful, and hand pies are a great activity to do with them. My husband also loves making hand pies when he's by himself just because they're sort of like Pop-Tarts in a sense, but they taste so much better because they have all kinds of homemade fillings, and you can customize them depending on what you want. So he loves to get in the kitchen and do them.
Yeah.
As well, but they are great to do with kids. And what you do is you make a basic pastry, so you can, in the book, that a lot of them call for the butter pastry, but you could do a shortening pastry. You can do any pastry recipe, really, that you want. And then the fillings can range from a brown sugar filling, which is brown sugar, a little bit of granulated sugar, a little bit of butter, and cinnamon. And that's mixed together, and use that to spread on the dough that you've rolled out. And you can do it in circle shapes, or you can roll it into a big circle and cut the dough into fours and then fold the pieces so they're more sort of turnover shape. They can be done round. You can do them with cookie cutters if you want to get real cute with the kids. I mean, they can be done so many different ways. You can pinch the edges with your finger. You can use the tines of a fork. So the nice thing is, there, although there's directions in here to do it a certain particular way, really anything goes with them. Yeah. So you can have fun. You can put different flavored icings on them once they've cooled, which is delicious. So on, you know, you could fill them with a little bit of cherry jam, and you could do a vanilla or an almond icing on them. I have some in here which are chocolate hand pies, where you break up chocolate bars and put pieces inside. And if you wanted to, you could put a little bit of dried fruit or a little sprinkle of maybe hazelnuts with your chocolate in the middle. I have chocolate babka hand pies, raspberry, there's blueberry ones, poppy seed.
I'm looking forward to trying this with fig preserves.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, let's take some more calls. We've got a number of folks waiting to talk with you, Julie. So let's go and take some more calls. Next, we go to Germantown Hills, Line 1. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is a fascinating subject. Berry pie has always been one of my favorites, and cobblers as well. In fact, rhubarb cobbler is the only thing that I consistently would eat four helpings of and wish I could have even more. My mother used to make the most fabulous rhubarb cobbler. Anyway, the problems my wife and I now face is that we've eaten too much pie, and it shows up around the waistline. So I'm wondering if there's anything in your book about how to make pies and cobblers with fewer calories and reduced sugar.
Well, that's a very good question, and something that we probably all have to think about from time to time, especially while I was working on the pie book and taste testing so many pies myself. I always believe in using real ingredients, so I don't like sugar substitutes. But the nice thing about making a cobbler filling is that you can adjust the amount of sugar according to taste. So now rhubarb tends to be very sour. So if you were doing rhubarb, you would then want to combine it with another fruit that was pretty sweet. And you could probably get away with adding less sugar, but again, do it to taste. And you're using cornstarch as a thickener, so it's not needing the sugar to actually thicken.
No.
So that would be the first thing. Yes, you could cut down the sugar, but I would recommend using sugar and not using a substitute.
Our experience with substitutes has been that they mess up with it. They don't taste good.
They don't taste good. And that's my opinion, but I always would rather have a smaller portion of a dessert that was sweetened with something real like sugar and had all the real fruit in it than something that was artificially sweetened and had other things in it. So, yes, you're right. It tastes so much better with sugar. And the nice thing about if you did a crisp, you can get away with using very little fat. So you're using a lot of oats and flour, and for your flour, you could be using whole wheat pastry flour in there.
And it really only takes a couple of tablespoons of either butter or a non-hydrogenated margarine or oil. You could even use oil to just, you know, help kind of get it to clump. And, of course, you would have a little bit of sugar in there as well. But you don't have to add as much. And you sprinkle that on top. So you just do like a lighter topping of that, and I think it would be wonderful. And you could probably cut quite a few calories out of it that way.
You want to follow up?
That way, and it does work very well. Tastes good. Well, thank you very much for your comments.
Oh, you're welcome. You have good taste in cobblers.
Oh, I love it. So long.
Thanks
Bye.
For the call. Next, we take a call from a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I've got three kinds of pies. One of them is a question. But the first story is years ago, my sister-in-law made a lemon pie for us, and she got distracted somehow and left out the sugar. Enough said. My wife recently made a pie she called broccoli pie.
Really?
It's cut up broccoli with some kind of binder and some spices, and then fried in a shallow frying pan. And when it comes out, it looks like a pie. And you slice it up like a pie and serve it like a pie. And it was delicious. I wish I could give you the recipe, but I don't have it in front of me.
I'm so curious now.
Well, the third one is a question. In Kentucky, restaurants serve pecan pie, of course.
Yeah.
But they also serve a pie called chess pie. And I've never known what it is. It tastes somewhat like pecan pie without the nuts. Do you know what it is at all? Chess pie.
I know of chess pie. I don't have any recipes in the book, but I believe there's a fair amount of flour and sugar and eggs in a chess pie, and I think that they're oftentimes lemon flavored or chocolate, if I remember.
Yeah, I think this is probably closer. It's closer. It almost tastes like a pecan pie without the nuts, the ones I've had.
Oh, it sounds delicious.
Yeah, okay. That's all. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Maybe our fellow from the South who loves the sweet potato pie would call in and tell us about chess pie.
Because
I know it's a Southern dish as well. And you know what? I feel like I must go on investigate.
Absolutely. I feel like I should take a trip around the country.
Oh, that would be great.
Try pies in every region. It would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Well, let's take another call. A listener in Vermilion County on line three. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
The question is in the air still about why lard. Is that correct?
Yes.
I would say it has to do with the fact that a generation or two ago when people butchered, if they butchered a hog, they had all of this rendered fat, and they had to figure out what to do with it. And if they were feeding people who were working hard, a pie would use up the lard. So especially as you had fruits in season, that was the way of using what you had. And I would guess that's where pie crust came from.
I believe that you're correct on that. I mean, it makes sense, and there was nothing wasted, and that is probably exactly why people started using lard.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's take another call. A listener in Farina, line four. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thanks for the interesting program.
Sure.
I've got two things. Well, three, actually. My favorite pie is cherry pie. And gee whiz, since, you know, I was a little kid and everything. And I appreciate you talking about using whole food ingredients. Could you quickly go over the crust recipe? Okay, and then the big question for me is, do you have any savory pie recipes? I discovered this flavor at a Chinese restaurant. It's chili garlic ginger flavor in a savory vegetable dish. Do you have any kind of pie ideas like that or anything like that? Okay, and thank you all. I appreciate the show.
Okay. All right. So maybe we want to talk with this fellow about, he's rung off now, but a basic recipe for a fruit pie because he likes the cherry pie, and then something like, I don't know, something, some kind of a savory pie or tart, maybe with a little kind of a hoisin.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm thinking as far as the savory pie that he was talking about, I would look for, you know, maybe at like a chili garlic black bean sauce at the, you know, at an Asian market or at the grocery store, and combine that with whatever, you know, whether it's, you know, chicken or vegetables and different stuff, and I would put it in a pie shell. So maybe pre-bake your pie shell or partially bake your pie shell and make the filling to taste so that it tastes like what you had in the Asian restaurant, in the Chinese restaurant, and then put it in your pie shell and bake it until it's all warm and bubbly.
Yeah, I think it would also work in a hand pie, wouldn't it?
It would work in a hand pie, which would be a great idea. And it would also work in a tart shell, and it could be a lot of fun. I love just sort of coming up with different fillings for savory pies or tarts. And I mean, you could do anything. You can do roasted vegetables. You can do all kinds of things.
Yeah, okay. And the essentials for a basic crust for a fruit pie, Julie?
Yeah. Now, I'm looking here in the book, and I guess I can do I'll do the all-purpose buttery dough, which is enough for 1 9-inch pie.
Double crust.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is 3 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar. But if you're making this as a savory pie, you would want to cut that sugar down to probably about a tablespoon, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 cup of cold butter, which has been cut into small pieces, and make sure that that's really ice-cold butter, and 6 to 8 tablespoons of ice water. And what I like to do is make it in the food processor, but if you're going to make it in the food processor, it can be your best friend, and it's certainly the quickest way to make it, but you want to make sure that you don't overwork it. So what I do is I start off by adding the flour and the sugar and the salt, and I add that to the bowl of the food processor with the metal S blade, and I pulse it just until it's mixed together. Then I'll add my ice-cold fat in there and pulse it a few times until you have big P-shaped pieces of butter. And then I will add most of the ice water. So I'll start with 6 tablespoons and add it in. And then I'll pulse it and just as it starts to come together. And then I reach in and I feel it. I'll grab a little ball of it and squeeze it together. And if it feels like there's enough moisture in there, I'll just stop. And I'll dump that onto my countertop, but preferably like a piece of parchment or a silicone rolling mat. And then you can just form it together into a disc, a ball, and then press it into a disc, and then I will chill it. But if it doesn't come together enough and it feels like it needs a little more water, then I'll add another tablespoon. I'll pulse it again. I'll check it again. And then if I need to, I'll add just a little bit more water until it's the right consistency. So it is a lot a matter of feel. And you'll just kind of, the more you make it, the more of a feel you'll get for the exactly what it should feel like.
Okay.
How much moisture.
Good.
And it really depends on the weather and your flour. There's a lot of different things. So sometimes I wind up adding a little more liquid, and sometimes I wind up adding a little less liquid.
So trust your instincts.
Trust your instincts, yes. Absolutely, because, you know, a recipe, it's very much like that with bread, too, that the amount of water or liquid that you'll need to add to a recipe will change depending on certain conditions. So absolutely, trust your fingers and trust your instincts.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, Julie Hassan, author of The Complete Book of Pies, 200 Recipes from Sweet to Savory. And we had a listener from Kentucky call in to say chess pie. Pecan pie without pecans, derby pie around derby time, pecan pie with chocolate chips and bourbon. So apparently there are many recipes for chess pie. And I have also just come up with just a little information here. Apparently, what sets chess pie apart from many other custard pies is the substitution of cornmeal for flour.
Oh, okay.
and it is closely related to vinegar pie, and the two terms are often used interchangeably. And the pie seems to have no relation to the game of chess. So there's just a little bit of chess pie trivia.
That's great.
So what do you say we take another call? A listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi. This is a wonderful topic, and so many people have been contributing. When I worked in Kentucky at Boone Tavern, we had a pie called a Jefferson Davis pie, which the hotel instructor said was a version of a chess pie. And the Jeff Davis pie had eggs, you know, a basic custard, and of course cream, but also brown sugar. It definitely did not have cornmeal in the crust, but it did have a little lemon rind and a little lemon juice. But I have another recipe for a Jefferson Davis pie that also includes cinnamon and allspice and sometimes even dates and spices. So I think it's pretty regional.
Oh, nice. And it does sound like it would be a regional thing as well. But it sounds wonderful.
Oh, it was. It always sold well. I know. I have a question to ask. When the gentleman was asking about cutting down a little bit on the sugar, and I agree that some of the sweeteners, the equals and the saccharins and that sort of thing, don't come out tasting very good. But there's some diabetes in our family, and we've been experimenting with fruit pies with using not 100%, but part of the sweetener as agave syrup, which apparently diabetics can tolerate way better than sugar in terms of glucose levels. So that might be something to think about, too. And I wanted to ask you, have you ever made a crust with the white whole wheat? And I'd like to listen to your answer, and then I'll just hang up and listen to the rest.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing that information about the Jefferson Davis pie.
And the agave?
The agave is something that I have been experimenting with recently, and I love it. Now, I have not played with it as part of a pie filling, but I don't see why you couldn't use it. But you might then, since it's more liquid, need to add a little bit more thickener. So you would probably want to add a little bit more cornstarch if that's what you're using as your thickener to it, because it would be a little bit wetter. But I think it would be great in a pie. The agave is great. The agave syrup is wonderful. I put it on cornbread and all kinds of things, so I'm having fun playing around with it. Mm. And as far as the white wheat, that's something else I've been playing around with, and I have not yet tried it in a pastry dough, but I'm very curious too. And I don't know, because some of the white wheat flours that are out there are more of a bread flour, so it might have too high of a gluten content for the dough, but I'm very curious to try it because I do like it in baked goods.
Okay, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Julie Hassan is our guest today on the program. She's the author most recently of The Complete Book of Pies, 200 Recipes from Sweet to Savory. You'll find our guest online at www.juliehassan.com. That's Hasson. And also online at everydaydishtv.com. Julie, I have visited your website briefly.
Yeah.
And I have visited everydaydishtv.com, which is a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you.
The website, at your website, is there a way for people to comment, to get in touch with you, to contribute to your blog?
Well, probably the best way to contact me is there is a button on my website that says blog. And if you click on that, it will take you right to my blog. And somewhere on my blog, I have to look, I forget exactly where, it's got my email address. But I can just tell you the email address is blog@everydaydish.tv.
Okay.
And that is one way to reach me. So if anybody has a great pie recipe or a story or something like that, I love to get emails from people with all kinds of things like that. And then sometimes it's fun to be able to share those stories or recipes on my blog as well. So yes, please.
Yeah. Okay, because the caller who called about broccoli pie.
Yes,
expect
I would
to hear
love
from
that.
Him.
Okay,
expect
I would
to hear from him, and then we can check in and find out what it's all about.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you like the website. We have a lot of fun. We have over, I think we have close to 60 cooking videos on there.
Yeah, and there was one I was watching of you making soy milk. I had no idea you could make your own soy milk.
Oh, yeah. And see, that's something I love to play around with flavors, as you can probably tell from the cookbook. So soy milk, like anything else, you can play around and customize it and sweeten it however you like. So it's a healthy alternative.
Yeah. And here we've got to wrap up, unfortunately. We're, okay. We're out of time. But I wanted to mention that your book, The Complete Book of Pies, includes recipes that are vegetarian and vegan friendly.
Yes.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. How did you make that decision to include those?
I actually pushed for that, and my publisher agreed that it would be a nice thing to have for people, because not just for people that are looking for vegan recipes, which is one nice thing, because usually they're sort of excluded from recipes in a lot of books, but also there's so many people now that avoid dairy or eggs for so many different reasons, whether it be allergies or cholesterol, different things. So I thought it would be really nice to be able to put the logo on the recipes so that people that were looking for specific recipes that did not contain egg or dairy, that they would be able to find them really easily. So it was something that I collaborated with the publisher on, and it's worked out really well, and we've gotten great feedback about that.
Yeah, really nice to see that.
Thank you.
Julie, thank you very much for joining us, and I look forward to having you on the show again sometime in the future.
Oh, great. Thank you, and I would love to come back again. So thank you so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. Julie Hassan is the author of a number of cookbooks, the most recently published The Complete Book of Pies, 200 Recipes from Sweet to Savory. You'll find her online. Her website is www.juliehassan.com. That's Hasson. And The Complete Book of Pies, published by the publisher, Robert Rose. It's 1:53. Settlement prices should be in from Kansas City and Chicago. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Les. Let's take a look at those numbers on a Wednesday afternoon as they finished up in the wheat pit. From Chicago Soft, red had a high today of $5.14 a bushel, the low at $5. That lead option December contract settled at $5.75, down 9 cents on the afternoon. March, $5.37, the high, the low at 18. Settlement price just above that at $5.19, down 8.75. And May futures, $5.47, the high, the low at $5.33. Settlement price at $5.33, down 9 cents. July contract, $5.60, the high, the low at $5.45. Settlement price at $5.46, down 9.25. And next year's December futures, $6. The high, the low at $5.85. Settlement price at $5.86, down 10.25. From Kansas City, nearby December hard red winter wheat lost 8 cents today at $5.29 on its settlement. And the spring wheat at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, down 2 cents at $5.88. From the corn pit in Chicago, nearby contract, that's the December harvest month, $3.38, the high, the low at $3.29. Settlement price at $3.32, a half lower. March futures unchanged today, $3.54, the high, the low at $3.45. Settlement price at $3.48, and May futures $3.65, the high, the low at $56.50. Settlement price at $3.59, down a quarter. July contract $3.75 in the corn pit for the high, the low at $3.67. Settlement price for the July corn $3.69, down a quarter. And next year's December $4.50, the high, the low at $3.92, closed at $3.94, down 0.75 cents. December futures from the oat pit $2.10, the high, the low at $2.08. Settlement price at $2.05, down a penny. March contract $2.21, down 1 cent on the afternoon. Soy complex gained 3 cents in the nearby contract. $8.44 was the high, the low at $8.19. That January contract settled $8.30 a bushel, up 3. March futures for the beans, $8.49, the high, the low at $8.26. Settlement price $8.35, up a half. In May contract $8.57, the high. Low at $8.37, settlement price $8.43, down a penny. July futures $8.66, the high, the low at $45.25, settlement price at $8.51, down 1.75. And next year's November, that's the harvest month for 2009, $8.70, the high. The low price there at $8.50, a 20 cent trading range, settled close to the bottom end at $8.54, down a penny and a quarter on the afternoon. December bean meal futures for Wednesday, $250.80. The high, the low at $244.50. A settlement price of $248 a ton, down $1.90. January futures, $249.90. The high, the low at $243.20. Settlement price of $246.70. $1.40 lower for the January soybean meal. Soybean oil, nearby December contract, $30.98 the high. Low at $30.09. Settlement price at $30.28, down 14 cents. January futures, $31.37 the high. The low at $30.41. Settlement price at $30.58. Finished 19 lower on the afternoon. I'll return at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time. That's 10 minutes away when we'll talk today with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
We turn our attention now to what happened in Chicago at the Merck with the livestock contracts. They finished lower on the day today. December live cattle, 85.10 the high, the low 83.65, the settlement 83.82.5, that down 52.5. February 85.70 the high, 84.02.5 the low, 84.07.5 the settlement, that down 87.5. April 87.30 the high, 85.75 the low, the settlement 86.05, that down 47.5. June 83.25 the high, the low 81.90, the settlement 82.10, that down 40. January feeder cattle, 90.02.5 the high, 88.10 the low, 88.35 the settlement, that down 65. March, 90 even the high, 88.05 the low, and the settlement, that down 105. April, 90.40 the high, 89.05 the low, 89.25 the settlement, that down 72.5. And May feeder cattle, 91.50 the high, 89.90 the low, the settlement, 90.40, that down 50. December lean hogs, 58 even the high, 57.47.5 the low, the settlement 57.57.5, down 80 cents. February, 64.60 the high, 64.05 the low, 64.37.5 the settlement, that down 110. April, 71.50 the high, 70.70 the low, 70.87.5 the settlement, that down 127.5. May lean hogs, 79.50 the high, 78.80 the low, 79.25 the settlement, that down 95. And February bellies, 92.20 the high, the low 89.55 the settlement, 92 even, that down 12.5. The Dow is up 57 points at 84.76. The Nasdaq up 20 at 14.70. The S&P 500 up 7 at 8.56. The price of crude in New York at the Merck trading down 46 cents at $46.50. That's the nearby month of crude. It's 1.5 minutes before 2 o'clock. This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. A winter weather advisory is in effect for northwestern Illinois until 6 p.m. and for north central and northeastern Illinois until midnight tonight. Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon. In northwestern Illinois, snow with 3 to 5 inches likely by sunset. From northeastern to west central Illinois, rain and snow arriving, changing to all snow with 1 to 3 inches by sunset. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers arriving, highs ranging from 30 in northwestern Illinois to 55 in the far south. Tonight in northwestern and west central Illinois, mostly cloudy with snow showers tapering to flurries. Elsewhere in northern and central Illinois and in northern Indiana, snow during the evening hours tapering off after midnight. In central Indiana, rain changing to snow. In the south, rain showers mixing with and changing to snow showers in some locations well after midnight. Lows tonight ranging from 9 in far northwestern Illinois to 29 in the far south.